Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my brothers and my sisters, and welcome once again to another edition of the PRF Table. I'm your host, Brother Dunlap. Also hosting is Sister Dia Sanders, and also hosting with us at the table for probably about the third week in a row, Sister Marianne Williams. So, Dia, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing good. Glad to be here this week, and hope everybody's had a good week thus far.
Amen. Thank you for that. And Sister Mary, how are you doing?
I'm excited, and I'm doing fine, thanking and believing everybody else is having a good day today. Don't have a good evening.
Brother Feaster, my brothers and sisters, won't be on with us this morning, so Adia, Sister Mary, is going to be us three, and hopefully everybody else, all those of you who are listening right now, will jump into the conversation. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a subject that kind of goes in line with what happened yesterday with the passing of Dr. Maya Angelou, and I really was thinking about this idea because I know there was a lot of people who had a lot of shows. I know one of our counterparts, Iconoclast Radio on this We Speak Radio Network, which we're all on together, she had a show, Camille Townsend had a show honoring Dr. Poet Maya Angelou, and I thought that was so ironic because I didn't even catch her show yesterday, didn't know that she was actually having a show. So we know there's been a lot of shows and a lot of talk about Dr. Maya Angelou and her contributions. And so one of the listeners, I was throwing something out there about topics for tonight, and one of our listeners brought up the term legacy. And I started thinking, what about legacy? And she started to tell us about how important it was to leave a legacy behind. And you recall, you know, we've had a show dealing with will and inheritances before, maybe one or two shows. And I thought about legacy, and I try to think about how different is legacy from an inheritance. And so tonight, what we're going to be talking about for tonight, our show is going to be, is legacy worth more than money? Is legacy worth more than money? And let me just tell you what we're going to try to do tonight. We have a couple of poems from Dr. Maya Angelou. We have the first one, which was requested by Brother Feaster. Now, Brother Feaster, who is not going to be on with us tonight, actually requested that I read Phenomenal Woman, his favorite poem, on the air. Adia, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I do have Dr. Angelou reading the poem herself. So we're going to play that in a few. And then I also have another one which is really, really interesting, which is called On the Pulse of Morning. And this is about 6 minutes long, so we'll play it later on in the show when more of our listeners come on. And I think it's important that we, you know, when we're talking about a legacy, that we can hear the thing or one of the things that actually contributed to this particular individual leaving a legacy and why we honor that and the things that this individual has done. And I know Sister Mary is going to talk about one individual in particular who left a legacy, and we'll talk about that, and Adia will bring you into that as well. So let me just go to you, Adia. You know, when we talk about legacy, what comes to your mind when we talk about legacy, just the term or the terminology legacy?
Man. The first word that comes to mind is just like a big impact. That person has made a big impact in the lives of a lot of people that they probably have never met.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're still living, we'll never meet. But they still made a big left and made a big impact.
Wow. That's good. I like that. Sister Mary, what do you say?
Wow. I was thinking the same thing that Sister Dear was saying, because I was thinking about how someone left a big impact on my life that also has affected your life.
Right, that's right.
You know, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm finished.
and this is what I think, you know, I was thinking about it as well. You know, I was thinking about legacy, but also I was also thinking about inheritance because, again, on the PRF table, we've talked about inheritances. So, you know, when I looked up the definition, y'all know I like to read definitions. The definition of inheritance is the right of an heir to succeed to property on the death of an ancestor. So with an inheritance is also something that may be legally transferred or transmitted to an heir. So if you go back and you think about in the book of Luke or Gospel of Luke in chapter 15, the story that is, quote unquote, what we hear so often called the prodigal son, but in that particular particular parable that Jesus was speaking about, it dealt with inheritance because the younger son went to the father and said, I want my inheritance now. So he wanted his physical possessions. He wanted the things that knew he was going to get when the father died, but he wanted them right now. But then when I think about the word legacy, and I looked up the word legacy, it says something handed down from an ancestor or a predecessor or from the past. So that shows me a very distinct difference between a legacy and an inheritance. You know, an inheritance is something that I'm going to give to you when I die. A legacy is something that can be from somebody, as you said, Adia, that you have no idea who it is, may never have met that person. It could be an ancestor, but it may not be an ancestor. It could be somebody that came before you in an organization, or it could just be somebody from our past. And the greatest thing that I like about a legacy, it has no regard to color. It has no regard to race. It has no regard to economic status. It is something that is being left or that is given or provided to somebody that you may or may not even know. So for me, I think it's important that we try to look at this thing from the perspective of not looking at money as being the thing that we want to leave behind. You know, there's been a lot of individuals that have had this mindset, and I know I had it once upon a time, y'all, that if I can just get this good job, I can hold on to this good job, then I can do these different things. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that we can do for our children that we – let's look at Christmas, Adia. We buy Christmas gifts because we're trying to give them something now. And oftentimes it doesn't even last, right?
Yeah.
I think when we talked about this back in December, we were talking about, tell me what you got for Christmas last year. Yeah, I hear you giggling back there because you remember that show.
Yeah,
and
I
most
did.
Of us couldn't remember what we got last year, you know, and it was just amazing just to have that. So when I'm thinking about, you know, an inheritance and the difference between inheritance and a legacy, you know, it's something that is going to last forever. I can leave an inheritance to my child, and within 1 year that inheritance is gone. And it may not ever be remembered that daddy left me $20,000 or mama left me $20,000 or grandma left me $30,000. It never may be remembered, but a legacy is going to be something that sticks in your mind for a long time to come. And when you hear certain things like Phenomenal Woman, which I'll play in a minute, when you hear that thing, it reminds you of the type of person that Dr. Maya Angelou was and what she did for civil rights and what she did in the lives of people in general. And you know, we don't want to have this misconception out there that she was only an advocate for African Americans. She was not. And you'll hear that when you hear her poem On the Pulse of Mourning. Well, it really breaks down a whole bunch of races and classes and isms to let everybody know that we're in this thing together. So, Adia, did you have anything? I heard you giggling in the background when I was talking about Christmas.
No, not right now. Nope.
Okay. Well, let me go to, and let's just listen to Phenomenal Woman. This is for Brother Feaster as well.
Many people wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I start to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arm, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes, the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist, the joy in my feet. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, it's in the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breast, the grace of my style. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me passing, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palms of my hands, the need for my care. Because I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman, all you women and me.
So I'm gonna come to the younger of the two. I'm gonna come to you, Adia. When you hear that, what does that speak to you? What does that speak to you about? Just what does it speak to you? I'll let you go. I don't even want to try to preface anything because I'm a man.
Well, the first thing I think of is just the strength of a woman and what a young girl can look up to. Because I remember when I did that poem, it was a group of young girls. I was going to the Q House on Dixwell Avenue in New Haven. And we did that poem. And we had on our leotards and we had on our African, like, kente cloth attire wrapped around our waist and our heads. And I remember us doing that poem. And it was about maybe, I don't know, however many verses it is in that, in the poem. But each of us had a verse. And so when I hear that poem, I can still remember the verse that I had when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old. So I still remember that poem. And I still remember us, you know, rehearsing and giggling about the part where she talked about the, you know, the breast and the hips. And I still remember that poem. And I still remember my the lines that I had in it, and I can remember where I was and what I wore when I did that poem for the first time in public. And so we're talking about 11 years old when I did that poem, probably maybe, yeah, about 11, 12 years old, and I still have that memory. And so that poem, what it means to me is it was like a poem that spoke to my future, to my destiny of who I can become. You know, and that people may not always understand me, but I need to be confident and secure in who I am. And so I love that poem, absolutely love it, and am thankful for the counselors that we had that worked with us to put together the whole program to even be able to recite that song because, like I said, I was a little kid, and the impact that that poem still has in my life today.
Sister Mary.
Well, this is really touching. This is really touching my heart because as I listen to that poem, what I pick up is that she's a very secure woman. She's very confident, and she knows who she is. And why it's touching me so is because I'm just now beginning. I'm 68, and I'm just now beginning to feel secure within myself, confident in myself. And I remember, you know, I was brought up around a lot of negativeness from 1 to 10, and so I felt very ugly, you know. And as I'm listening to this, when I was 18 years old, I said, when I get so I could put makeup on, I'm going to put makeup on because I saw that people had makeup on, they looked better, and they seemed like they were more received. And so I wore makeup not just because I want to wear it, but because I felt that when I put my makeup on, I felt better. It was like my makeup was really my confidence. You know, I had no confidence in myself. You know, it's the makeup. Now I know I look good. Now I know everybody's going to receive me. And in the poem, and also what I'm picking up, too, out of it is that she didn't have to pretend to be, you know. And I used to be a person that, as I was growing up, I want kids to receive me, you know. So I'm a yes person. Yes, I'll go to the movies with you. You know, I had a friend, and it was three of us. And one of them would say, you know, I'm not going to be dealing with her because, you know, she wants everything her way. But me, I dealt with her because, you know, and I was always, yes, we'd go to this movie, even if I didn't want to go to that movie. It was like I could never just speak up for myself. And so I saw here that she didn't have to pretend, you know. Her yes was yes and her no was no, you know. She walked with confidence. She, you know, she didn't have to put anything on but just be who she was, herself. And when she walked, she knew it didn't matter whether anyone received her or not, because she knew herself, I am beautiful, you know, I am smart, I am intelligent, you know, I know who I am, and people do not dictate my future. I dictate who I am, you know, and that's what I get out of that.
Man, you know, y'all are saying so much, you know, Adia, when the fact that you had counselors that was there. And, you know, let's look at this thing, because, again, the title is Legacy Worth More Than Money? You can't place a dollar value on those counselors that had it within them to do this for you and know the impact that it was going to have on you as a young woman, as a mother, as a wife, as a senior officer, that's what I'm going to say, as a senior officer in the military, you're not a junior officer anymore, as a senior staff officer in the United States Army, when there was a time that women could not serve in the military, when there was a time that you had to do certain things as far as staying at home and you couldn't even work in certain communities. There was a time where your life right now, and the confidence that Sister Mary was talking about, being able to be confident, being able to be secure, to know that you can do those things because somebody's laid a pathway ahead of you. You know, I can just imagine if you didn't have that, not saying that these counselors were the only people that influenced your life, but the fact that this one poem, that I don't know when the last time you may have heard it or not, but yeah, to me, That speaks to this legacy being worth more than money, because you could have still had a good job maybe, but what about all the other things that were said inside of this poem that actually influenced some decisions that you have made? Mm. How does it influence how you raise your daughter? How does it influence how you be a mother figure to other little young girls who may not have a mother that's struggling with some things?
Yeah.
So I'm just elated that we're even, you know, for one, that one of our listeners brought this up, but the second thing is that I have women on the show that's able to talk about it, especially because we're talking about the legacy of somebody as great as Dr. Maya Angelou. I love the fact, Adia, that you talked about that it spoke to your future, because that's what a legacy does. Remember I said a legacy is something that comes from the past. Even though she was still with us, when that poem was recited, when that poem was provided to you at 11, 12 years old, it was still something of the past, but it was living in the present.
Mm-hmm.
Something of the past that was living in the present that spoke to your future. Sister Mary, is there anybody... You mentioned somebody, so I'll let you bring up this individual that really left a legacy, and just let you have a few minutes just to really talk about, you know, who this person was and some of the accomplishments, one, that this individual did in their lifetime, and two, the legacy that they left upon you as as an individual and however you want to come to us with that. But also, I think what's more important or as equally important is the legacy that you are aware of how this individual has affected other people's lives, where you can get an education, you can get money, and money can help satisfy life, but what are some of the things that this person left behind that this person may not have any knowledge about? And as Adia said, as this person is no longer here on this earth, they have no idea how that those things that they have done have impacted somebody else's life.
Okay, thank you. It's my great aunt, and her name is Miss Eva Mae Slater, but I call her Aunt Eva Mae. And I stayed with my grandmother from 1 to 10. And my grandmother asked my Aunt Eva Mae, would she come and get me? Which she is my great aunt, and because my grandmother knew that she could not give me what my grandmother could, what she could do for me. And my Aunt Eva Mae was also an educator, and she was a single woman. She was never married. So one day she came to the house, and I had never seen her before. And she came to the house, and I was just told that this is who I was going to live with. And she told her, she says, I got all her clothes and everything, and that she don't take anything with her. You know, I have everything ready, you know. And so I got in the car, and I went with her. So I wasn't told anything. And so then when we arrived, and I was in Virginia at the time, when we arrived in Fayetteville, North Carolina, you know, there we were in strictly poverty. So when I went to this beautiful house, it was just like so strange to me, you know, and I had my own room and it was so beautiful and everything, you know, and a closet full of clothes and the drawer was full of everything, you know, and I was just like, wow. But when she told me, she says, now, it's only two of us in this house, and she says, and we're going to share. And she says, now, we don't have any, we always wash out our undergarments, you know. And it was like, wow, you know, mommy, I called my grandmother mommy, you know, and mommy never, you know, just didn't have the time. I mean, she went to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, she got home at 6, and then she had all of us to take care of. So she just didn't have that type of time. And so she did everything. And so I'm saying, first thing I said was, mommy didn't make me do that, you know. And she said, well, I know your grandmother didn't. You know, and I didn't like that because that's mommy to me. You know what I mean? She said, well, I know your grandmother didn't, you know, and she said, but this is how we're going to do it. She says, and I'm going to do mine and then you do yours. You know what I mean? And I was upset with that thing, you know, and I would like want to go back home to mommy. You know, and then the next day, then that morning, she said, now we make up our beds, you know, and she showed me how she made up her bed, and this is how I want you to make up your bed, and all the things. I mean, I just thought, I mean, she was like perfect to me, and she did everything she told me to do. And I really didn't like her because I felt she was being mean to me, and I wrote my grandmother a letter and told her that she was mean to me and I wanted to come home. And then my grandmother wrote me a letter back, and she told me, she says, you stay right there. So then I was mad with my grandmother, so I didn't write her anymore for a while. And so as time went on, and especially doing the dishes, oh, my gosh, I knew she got so tired of me and saying, mommy didn't make me do the dishes. Mommy didn't say, well, mommy, 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 you know. And so... And then I didn't want to do the dishes, so I would have to do the dishes, and she would just take the dishes down, and she says, you have all night to do the dishes. Oh, I was so angry with her. I just never liked her, period. That was it for me, for her. And then she would correct my English. You know what I mean? I would say there is, and she'd say they are. And it was just like, I'm not going to talk, because every time I say something wrong. But I thank God for her and the other things and about getting your education. And she put me, I was functioning probably the fourth grade level. She put me into Catholic school, although she taught in a public school. She put me in a Catholic school because she had some clout there. And she could, every week, could talk to the nuns about me. And really, she was very controlling, too, and tell the nuns what she felt that I need to be, what they need to be teaching me, you know. And then from there on, I could see her love for children, and she was about what was right. You don't mistreat children, and all her children just loved her, but I didn't like her. I couldn't understand why they liked her so, you know what I mean, because I didn't like her, you know, and I went to school, and to school, because we didn't have Catholic school, you had all kinds of St. Days, so I had all these days off, and she would take me classroom, and I used to ask them, you know, I said, you like her? And they said, yeah, we love Miss Slater. And I said, I don't like her. So they went back and they told her that. And so she sat me down and she told, and she said, you know, I don't, she said, you know, whatever her name was, she said, she told me what you said, that you didn't like me. But she said, you know something? She said, I don't care if you don't like me. She said, as long as you do what I'm telling you to do, because your grandmother expects for me to do the right thing by you. So, you know, I really didn't like her then. And so, but as I went on, and I remember she would get up in the morning. I mean, she was just, to me, the most perfect person. Get up in the morning, wake me up in the morning. I'm dragging and carrying on. So one morning, she just, you know, told me to get up. I didn't get up, and she came in there, and it was the summertime, and I had on that baby doll pajamas. Boy, she told me up. I was, oh, you know, I was really angry about that one. But I tell you one thing, she never had to wake me up again. You know, and so she was about, she just instilled so much in me, more morality she instilled in me, you know. She would tell people, you know, her business people, they would call even me, she said, no, I'm Miss Slater to you, you know. And then what the impact, as I look on my life now, she told me when I was carrying my son, you know, she says, he's going to make you proud, you know. And she says, you make sure that he gets educated. And you put him in Catholic school, you know what I mean? And I did that, and that has come to pass. My son has made me so proud. And I often think about what she said, because education was so important. She had five nephews, and all of them, and she believed in going to the military. And I used to think she was the mother of them, you know. They're her sister's children. All four of them went into military, you know. All four of them got educated, got their masters, whatnot. They all ended up in the paper doing good for the community and things of that nature. And so as I look at her, and it's times when I really don't feel good, or sometimes I don't feel like putting on my clothes, you know, I can never remember her being in her house coat. She got up, when she got on, she got dressed, the bed was made, everything was straight. And sometimes I pull from that when I'm not feeling well. I know it had to be times that she wasn't feeling good, but she went to school. She taught school for 40 years, and when she got ready to retire, she had a whole year of pay, because a whole year, all those years, she didn't take off any time from school. And another thing, too, was that she got written up in the New Haven Register about really presenting a new Negro History Week, you know what I'm saying? And then one of the most important things stood out to me is that she went into special education and a troop, and she had these children, and they told her they just passed on. They slightly retarded. They don't learn anything. So these children she had, and I think I gave my son a picture of them, none of them could read when she got them. And they said, well, you have to do much with them because, you know, hey, they're not going to, you know, they just retarded. They just passed. We just passed them on. But Ma said, no, I'm not passing them on. She said, when I finish with them, they're going to know how to read. And those children learn how to read, and not only that, she taught them how to fill out a job application. You know, and she was just about that. If you take out time with a child, you can teach them. You know, just to her, it was not in a child that was not teachable. You know, and she worked very closely with the children that were. And one of her teachers told her, she said, "Oh, I'm a hard teacher," and she says that. And my kids, I flunk a lot of my kids. And my aunt says, well, you know something? If you're flunking a lot of your children, that doesn't mean that you're a good teacher. That means you're not teaching the children. That's why they're flunking. You know what I mean? She says, no reason for for your children to be flunking, she said, because you're the teacher there, and you have to make sure that those children learn everything there that you're to teach them. You know, and she believed that student could be a B student if you took out that time and you helped them, you know. And so she's just and I just look at my children, you know, and I just look at them, they're educated. When I think of them, I think of her, because if she was living today, she would be so proud, you know, and her grandchildren, oh, my gosh, she'd be so proud, you know, because she was just about you, because she says you need to be educated so that you would just know things. You just need to know things. You don't need to be ignorant of things. Some things you are going to be ignorant of, but if you go to school and get your education, those are the things that you learn. Those are the things that you won't be ignorant of, and you'll be more productive, you know, as a citizen.
Whew, good gracious. Adia, did you hear that?
I did. I did.
I'm going to let you talk about that for a few minutes, and then I'll come behind you.
I think that is an amazing legacy that she left behind for you. And I say that because a lot of the things that you said, I was just like, oh, my mom has told me those same things. And to see the difference in, you know, your attitude, like, you know, because you did one thing with your grandmother and one thing, you know, with your aunt, you know, it was different for you. But
yes.
I look at it like I'm listening to you, and I'm like, I remember my mother always told us, you get up in the morning time and you make your bed up. You know, you get up on Saturdays because, you know, Monday through Friday you're going to school. You get up, you get cleaned up and stuff, you know, shower, bath, whatever it is that you're going to do, and you put clothes on. You're not going to sit around in my house in your night clothes all day. And that is something that I have shared with my children, and always, you know, helping somebody, always, you know, house being the neighborhood house, and where she would spend time and invest in children. And so to hear that, you know, your aunt did that with you, and not just you, but with other young people, that part right there is just, like, totally amazing. And it just reminded me of my mother and, you know, what I had learned about my grandmother, you know, and how she did the same thing, and how it just seems like, you know, we come from a family that help people, that like to help people. And and believe in investing in people and just believing in people in general. And so those are things that you still have as a part of your life, and that's what legacies do. They remain with you, even though the person has gone on, you know, deceased or whatever, or you've moved away. A legacy is something that you still, there's things that you still live by and things that you still do. And so to hear you saying, you know, at the age of 68 that you're still getting up in the morning and getting dressed and, you know, not just sitting around the house in your night clothes, is just like, that's what legacies do. Legacies challenge you. Legacies push you to go beyond the limits. Legacies, you know, tell you that you can do it when other people around you are telling you that you can't. That's what legacies, people who are legacies, that's what they do. They challenge you, and they not just motivate you, but they inspire you to live beyond what you're currently doing. And it goes and it goes into your future and how you live when you get older, even though you may not see it at the time. You know, and not only that, but then you pay it forward and you share it with other people, your children, other people's children. And that's what I like about legacies, is that a lot of times we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just have to keep passing it on, like how, you know, generational stories and blessings, generational blessings, you just keep passing it on. You don't just keep it for yourself where it dies and fades away, but it serves a purpose. And it's not always things that are tangible. They're things, life lessons, you know. Something as simple as, you know, like my mom used to say, make sure you have on clean underwear because you never know when you might have to be taken to the doctors or have to go to the doctors, and you don't want no underwear with holes in it. Well, to somebody, that might just sound stupid, like, but who cares? You know, but she was talking about being presentable at all times.
Right.
Being presentable. Taking pride in who you are and taking pride in what you have, in Feaster's famous word, being a good steward.
Yes.
Making your bed up. Those are things that, as you were talking, like I can hear my mother's voice, you know, and I can probably hear my grandmother's voice, you know, telling her children to do the same thing. Like, y'all not leaving out this house until your bed is made up.
Yeah.
And that is just so amazing. That is phenomenal. And your aunt was a phenomenal woman. Yes.
Thank you. And I want to add two more things that came up in my mind. With her children, she always checked their ears. She checked their ears and their teeth. And she told them, don't you come back to school with your ears not clean and your teeth not brushed. And then she had a child in her room that used to fall asleep all the time. And she could not get her homework done. So Anime went out her grandmother was taking care of her. And Anime went out to the grandmother's house, and she wanted to know why she was sleeping so. Her name was Carolyn. Carolyn told her, she said, well, the reason why I sleep is because I have everything to do. I have to do the cooking. I have to do everything. And her grandmother didn't work. And so Anime went out there, and she asked her, and she confronted her, asked her about it, you know. And she says, well, you know, I'm just teaching her, you know, that she just can't be living for nothing, et cetera, et cetera. So Anime said, well, let that be. But she said, let her come to school with her homework done one more day. and she sleeps in my class, she says, I am taking you to court.
Oh, wow.
She said, I am taking you to court. It was like, oh, my gosh, you know. I mean, she's just about her children. And on the weekend, what would we do? We would go out and visit her children's parents.
Hmm.
That's what we do on the weekend. She wanted to know how they're being taken care of. Yes, I just, that was just, this came up in my spirit. She told me she's taking it to court.
Wow.
Wow, she didn't know. She was like, and she was, and she ended up graduating from college. A lot of her, most of her children graduated from college too, by the way.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They were six, and they, she had them in the sixth grade. So that was a legacy, like you said, for them. That was
wow.
a legacy for them because they love Miss Slater. Oh, they want to spend the night with Miss Slater. A lot of them spend the night. Oh, they just love Miss Slater. Oh gosh, that's
and,
awesome.
Let me tell you. Well, one of the things that I think is important, excuse me, that that you mentioned was that she had these children in the sixth grade but knew that they graduated from college. That says a lot about the life of a true educator, that you're not just looking to teach that child for right now, that you're trying to make sure that you can do anything and everything that you possibly can, not just in the grade that you have them in, but wherever they're, you're needed, wherever your help is needed, and also keeping up with them, because the impact that that has, to know that, you know, when I listen to people speak sometimes, and somebody says, this was my third grade teacher. I remember Jasmine. Jasmine is 20. Today's her birthday. Happy birthday, darling. But I remember I went to a banquet, an awards banquet that she had, and I believe it was in the ninth grade, if I'm not mistaken, or the 10th grade. And she only could have a few people there. And I think it was like three. So it was like me, her mom, and I think it was her first grade teacher. And here she is in the ninth or 10th grade, and she has at this banquet, this event that is so special to her, to see her get awarded these awards, along with the other students that done great and phenomenal things in that grade, but to have her first grade teacher there. That says a lot about the impact, the legacy that that teacher has left upon her. And I watch Jasmine as she grows older, and as with every parent, you know, we're not always pleased with every decision that they're made. I'm sure my mama was not pleased with every decision that I made, and I'm glad she don't know about some of the decisions that I made, because she probably have a different light and story about me sometimes. But the things that were good, you know, those things are important, and knowing that somebody's cares enough about you. And I think it's important also for the person who's leaving the legacy, because like we said, we may not know that we're leaving the legacy, but when you get invited to participate in an awards banquet 9 years after or 10 years after that child was in your grade, that has to make you feel special. And so as we're talking about, is legacy worth more than money? I mean, think about it. Jasmine, as she graduates in 2 years from college, she can send a check back to this teacher and say, thank you for what you did for me back when I was in first grade. But I don't think that check would be valued as much as her being invited to that banquet that she had when she was in the ninth or the 10th grade. Because she was able to get it while she was here. What about if this teacher is not here when Jasmine graduates from high school or graduates from college? So it's something that could have been given right now, but maybe not enjoyed if it came in a form of money, monetary, in a monetary way. So when you were talking about, and even, Mom, here's a couple of things. Adia, you mentioned stewardship, because I heard about the chores and I heard about the housework, and you know, this is a family show. I can tell you, I didn't like to clean up. I ain't like washing no dishes. I ain't like making a bed. Let me tell you what I don't do today.
Like
I don't wash no dishes. I don't make no beds. I just don't do it. My wife does that. You know, our philosophy in our household is whoever does what best. So she washes dishes better than I do, because I'm going to put them in a dishwasher, and she makes up a bed, because that was something that her mom had instilled in her. And so even though my mom tried to instill it in me, it just didn't work.
You
so
didn't
I'm glad
that
I have a wife.
Vision.
Say that again.
I said, you didn't catch the vision, huh?
All
right.
But you know what? I can tell you this. When I went into the military, I didn't have a choice. And I did it. And I did it. But it wasn't because of a legacy. It wasn't because it was, oh, this is the right thing to do. You know, a couple of things that I heard when you were talking about Aunt Eva, and I think they're important. One of the things that you talked about correct English. I want everybody to know how important of a legacy that can be. Let me give you a perfect example. Our niece, little Zanaya, she's 7 now. Now, she doesn't live with us, never lived with us, but she's over here quite frequently. You know, a couple of times a month she spends the weekends with us. And this is one of the things that I remember when she was probably about 2, you know, when she's walking, and she would walk in the house, and she would throw her coat on the floor. And so I would like, Tootie, come here. And I'd point down at that coat, like, get the coat. And it only took a couple of times that she realized she couldn't do that. She was allowed to do that somewhere else. But at 7 years old now, 4 or 5 years later, she still remembers that. So she knows that there's a place for this, and it's not on the floor. It definitely ain't on the floor of my house. You see what I'm saying? And also, we're speaking about correct English. You know, we constantly work with her because when children are around different environments, it's going to take somebody to kind of correct them in how they need to be, how they need to use correct English, because it's going to matter. It matters when they're trying to read and write, because it doesn't sound right. If I'm telling you the correct way to structure a sentence and that doesn't sound right because that's not how they say it on BET or MTV or country music station, then we're going to have a little difficulty. So one of the greatest things, though, when you talked about education, I picked out of this, Sister Mary, was patience. Working with special needs children, it takes a level of patience to be able to do that. I know it takes patience working with just regular students. But special needs children, and it takes a special person to be able to do something like that. So working in the field of education for 40 years, and I can say I didn't see her in that environment, but I always heard you talking about her and how she was an educator and how she was an educator. Now I look at my life now being an adjunct, you know, faculty member in a university and also doing teaching in church and all of that. Those are things that I don't think I would be more apt to do if I didn't hear how rewarding and how valuable and how that actually affected people's lives. So we pass down legacies from one person to another, not knowing how it was going to affect. You would never have thought that I would have ever been an educator.
No.
You weren't telling me about what she did. You were telling me about the impact that she had on people's lives. And so you weren't saying that so that you could hope Nate was going to become an educator one day. You were just expressing the legacy that she actually left. And you mentioned also about treating people right. To me, that speaks about justice. And I think about my other career, how it's about justice and criminal justice and administration of justice and ethics, treating people right. You know, all of those things, to me, those type of legacies, Adia, I think are just worth more than money, because you have a lot of people that have a lot of money that's doing well financially, but they don't treat people right. And other people are seeing that. And the fact that other people are seeing it, they're leaving a legacy of not treating people right. Let me read something else. I think, Adia, when you were speaking, and if anybody's out there wants to talk, just press one on your dial pad. We'll bring you into the conversation. Something about what you were saying, Adia, about Aunt Bernice, and what you were saying, Mom, about Aunt Eva Mae. It took, I knew it was in there, but it took me to Titus chapter 2, or 2 Titus. And this is one of the things that Paul says to Titus. As for you, Titus, promote the kind of living that reflects wholesome teaching. Teach the older men to exercise self-control, to be worthy of respect, and to live wisely. They must have sound faith and be filled with love and patience. Some of the things that we've just been talking about. But it also says, and I think this is more appropriate for Aunt Eva and Sister Bernice and others, Similarly, teach the older women to live in a way that honors God. They must not slander each other or others and be heavy drinkers. Instead, they should teach others what is good. These older women must train the younger women to love their husbands and their children, to live wisely and to be pure and to work in their homes, to do good and to be submissive to their husbands. Then they will not bring shame on the word of God. So when I hear that, when I listen to that, that goes back to that first poem that we heard about, Phenomenal Woman. You know, there are some phenomenal women out there that have a lot of good stories to tell, and I want women to just be willing to tell their stories, to be able to show how phenomenal that they actually are in so many different areas of their life. I was reading something on a friend on from seminary on Facebook that was mentioning that as a solo pastor, this is her first year as a solo pastor, and she actually posted that there were some men that actually were come up and put their hands in her face and would yell at her and degrade her, and this is members of the congregation, and tell her she doesn't have any business, and I'm paraphrasing, any business dealing with the business of the church and things of that nature. But then I saw all of the comments that came after that, all of the encouraging words that came after that, and most of them were from women, all except for one. So I responded as well, and I thought that was something that was really, really needed, because we're all in this thing together. So we have a caller that's just joined on and wants to have a comment or a question. So caller with the last four of 2587, welcome to the PRF table.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Just wanted to say that I wanted to reiterate what you said. There are the positive aspects of legacy, and we've been discussing that so far. And, you know, it's good to focus on the positive, but by the same token, you know, there are negative aspects of legacy as well, and we want to be conscious not to leave the negative for the legacy, because that can happen just as well. It can be on purpose, and it can be inadvertent as well. So, you know, the bad habits or the pigeonholes that people like to put other people in, the stereotyping and that type of thing, sometimes we feed into it. And so we just have to be cognizant not to leave the negative legacy. And I'll throw one out there, just, you know, that black people are always late. So something like that. We don't want to leave the negative legacy. And where I am, they say that the people that are from here are always late. So, you know, sometimes they say CP time, well, here they say something else. But I'm not gonna say it, because I do feel like it's stereotyping, and not everybody who's black is late, and not everybody from here is late. So just wanted to reiterate that legacy can be an awesome thing. It is an awesome thing in light of Maya Angelou. She has done so many things. She's been labeled. She's done some things that are not, I'm sure she's not proud of. She was not proud of at the time, but she did what she had to do. Her legacy is all positivity, though. I mean, so she overcame some serious adversities to be this positive person and this shining light, and not just to black women, because she's a black woman, but to everybody, to presidents, you know, to major other civil rights leaders, you know, other people, other icons in the world, not just to other women, not just to other black women, not just to, you know, black men, but to everybody. So, you know, we have challenges. Everybody has their hand that they're dealt. Legacy is what people will remember you by, and we want to make sure we try to leave it positive and put every effort into making it a positive legacy. So make sure you're aware that there's also another side of legacy, and we want to make sure that we're addressing the things that could be a negative and try to turn them into a positive.
And I can address that.
I want to respond to what Shatara is saying. I do agree, and I will just share this little story. Like, you brought up about being late, and I have a pet peeve about being late. I don't care what it's for, but especially being late for church. Because growing up, I will tell you why, because growing up, we were always late for church. But like you said, like Maya Angelou had some very hard challenges in her life that she overcame. And so what I think about with legacy is that somebody could definitely be deemed a person that is a legacy, but there are things that happen in their life. And one of these things that happened in my mother's life was that we was always late for church, y'all. I'm telling you, it did not matter. And that always bothered me because I always felt like I was on time for school, so why can't we be on time for church? You're always on time for work. Why can't we be on time for church? Now, granted, I didn't drive and didn't have a driver's license. I still wanted to be on time because I thought that it was just the right thing to do because I loved God. And I felt like, you know, Jesus wanted us to be on time. So now, because that did not happen, I can count probably on one hand how many times we were on time for church growing up as a kid. But from that, I have come up and have given – that is a part of my legacy to pass on to my children and other people and to explain to them the importance of being on time. So I think that you can – that there are things from people that are legacies and have left legacies behind that may not have been the best or things that we liked, you know, because Cousin Mary, you said there were things from your aunt that you did not like. However, they are things that you were able to take and to – incorporate into your life and probably share them with other people, even though you didn't like it. I didn't like being late. But now I can say because I'm an adult and that's a part of my life that I did not like, I can do something about it. So I think that we have every day that we wake up in the morning time, it's an opportunity for us to take something that we did not like from somebody that is a legacy and to challenge ourselves to go above and beyond that of what they did or above and beyond what they overcame to say, you know what, I can do better and I will do better. And I think that is what is so amazing about a legacy is that it gives us the opportunity to begin to leave our legacy behind with other people from our experiences that we didn't necessarily like growing up as children or even in our young adult years or even right now. There may be things that we may not like, but it's an opportunity for us to impart our legacy to other people so that legacy continues to go on. And it's not something that is wrong, but something that we said, you know what, we don't have to keep doing this. We're going to tweak this and we're going to get it right. And we're going to keep it moving. And that's what I think is so amazing and phenomenal, since I think that's like the word.
Well, we have one more caller that wants to make a comment, so I'm going to bring this caller on with the last four of 1959. Welcome to the PRF table.
Thanks. I mean, I think I love the notion of progression and evolution and improvement. And my only caution is I think – you know, there are a lot of kind of theories that say, hey, we can only do 3 to 5 things really, really well. And so as you look to the part that your parents did wrong or that wasn't done quite the right way or was done in a very negative way, I think it's also important to say what were the 3 to 5 things that were done really, really well that allow us to stand where we stand today. And if that wrong prioritizes one of those things, great. But if the focus is just on, hey, this is the area that I want to improve that my parents did wrong, then you may end up being great at that thing that they did wrong, but you may miss the 3 to 5 foundational things that they did so well to set you up for success that actually you're in a worse place. So I would just encourage us to say, step back, have a balanced perspective and say, hey, these were the amazing things that my parents did for me to set me up for success. Balance that with, okay, but here's one or two things that I wish were done well, better, but it could be that 6th thing that they didn't do well actually is less important than the 3 to 5 things they did incredibly well. And so, again, I just encourage us to have a holistic and balanced perspective, because if you just sometimes focus on what they did wrong or what wasn't done for you or how they could have done things better, you may set your children up to do that thing better, but you may miss the 3 things that actually make you the person that you are today.
That's
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you.
Good. I wanted to speak on the adversity of my neighbor. I mean, what she had to overcome. Her mother was sick, and she had saved. She had worked at the silk mill. This is in North Carolina. And she had saved up her money because she wanted to go to Hampton University. And so her father asked her, you know, could he borrow the money and that she he would pay it back. So when it was time for her to go to college, he told her he didn't have it. And, of course, he wasn't paying it back either. And so instead of her getting negative about it, she went on ahead and she continued to work in the silk mill. She saved up her money and she and sent herself to school. And in the summertime, she worked you know, for cooking and doing housework and things, you know, for the white people, and that's how she got her education.
Interesting. Well, what I said at the beginning of the show was I wanted everybody to just hear, and I think we'll close out today's show by listening to Dr. Angelou recite a poem, which I think was very, very crucial to a couple points in my life, especially while I was actually going through seminary, and I received this poem from her and the words that came from her in a class one day from one of my ethics professors. And when I heard it, it had a very profound effect on me just as an individual, not as a minister, not as a man, but just as an individual, and saw how this particular poem affected so many people. And it's actually Dr. Angelou reciting On the Pulse of Mourning at the 93 presidential inauguration of President Clinton during his first term of presidency. So with that, I want everybody just to listen to this. This is how we're going to end the show tonight. Thank you for listening to us. Join back with us next week at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We ask everybody, please go out to the Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances. And as I mentioned about a month or so ago, that we're going to start taking the show into a little different direction. So come next Thursday, we're going to have a little bit of revamping on the show, and we want everybody to participate in. So with that, we ask everybody just to have a wonderful, wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.
Mr. President and Mrs. Clinton, Mr. Vice President and Mrs. Gore, and Americans everywhere, a rock, a river, a tree, hosts to species long since departed, marked the mastodon, the dinosaur, who left dry tokens of their sojourn here on our planet floor. Any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages. But today, the rock cries out to us, clearly, forcefully, come, you may stand upon my back and face your distant destiny. But seek no haven in my shadow. I will give you no hiding place down here. You, created only a little lower than the angels, have crouched too long in the bruising darkness, have lain too long face down in ignorance, your mouths spilling words armed for slaughter. The rock cries out to us today, you may stand upon me, but do not hide your face. Across the wall of the world, a river sings a beautiful song. It says, come, rest here by my side. Each of you, a bordered country, delicate and strangely made, proud, yet thrusting perpetually under siege. Your armed struggles for profit have left collars of waste upon my shore. Currents of debris upon my breast. Yet today, I call you to my riverside, if you will study war no more. Come, clad in peace, and I will sing the songs the Creator gave to me when I and the tree and the rock were one, before cynicism was a bloody sear across your brow, and when you yet knew, you still knew nothing. The river sang and sings on. There is a true yearning to respond to the singing river and the wise rock. So say the Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, the Native American, the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheik, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher. They all hear the speaking of the tree. They hear the first and last of every tree speak to humankind today. Come to me here beside the river. Plant yourself beside the river. Each of you, descendant of some past-owned traveler, has been paid for. You who gave me my first name, you Pawnee, Apache, Seneca, you Cherokee Nation, who rested with me, then forced on bloody feet, left me to the employment of other seekers, desperate for gain, starving for gold. You the Turk, the Arab, the Swede, the German, the Eskimo, the Scots, you the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the crew, bought, sold, stolen, arriving on a nightmare, praying for a dream. Here, root yourselves beside me. I am that tree planted by the river which will not be moved. I the rock, I the river, I the tree, I am yours. Your passages have been paid. Lift up your faces. You have a piercing need for this bright morning dawning for you. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon this day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. Women, children, men, take it into the palms of your hands. Mold it into the shape of your most private need. Sculpt it into the image of your most public self. Lift up your heart. Each new hour holds new chances for new beginnings. Do not be wedded forever to fear, yoked eternally to brutishness. The horizon leans forward, offering you space to place new steps of change. Here, on the pulse of this fine day, you may have the courage to look up and out and upon me, the rock, the river, the tree, your country. No less to Midas than the mendicant, no less to you now than the mastodon then. Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.